A select group of companies and charities had paid to meet the head of the civil service, David Stirling. That meeting was due to take place this afternoon. We can reveal this morning that that meeting has now been cancelled within hours of it due to take place. We can also reveal today that Mr. Stirling did not know money was involved. And a spokesperson within the last few seconds for the executive office have said that not only did he not know that money was involved, but that his view is it was right to cancel this event. Now, Resolute Public Affairs organised the event. It is led by Terry McAuleen. I asked him why he has cancelled the event.
Basically, Stephen, in light of comments on both Twitter and Facebook, I have taken the decision to cancel the event this afternoon. These comments have created the impression of some sort of impropriety about the event. I've informed Mr. Stirling of my decision. We're disappointed that what would have been an educational and interesting event for both businesses, charities and some others has had to have been postponed. Just to make very clear, anybody who has paid for the event thus far will be fully refunded.
Was there any discussion with David Stirling whatsoever as to whether the event should be cancelled or not? Did he give an opinion?
No, Stephen, no. It's been my decision.
So there was no discussion with him?
No. The discussion was basically me informing him after looking at some of the comments on Twitter and Facebook. Sure. There was nothing improper about this event, and I didn't want to create the impression that anything was improper about the event. It's disappointing. I think it would have been a very valuable educational event for both the participants and indeed Mr. Stirling.
And therefore, Terry, the obvious question from me is why have you buckled to a couple of people on Twitter? If there's nothing wrong with this event, why didn't you go ahead with it?
It's basically because there was a swell of people on Twitter and some on Facebook who were trying to link the event to other issues, were trying to question my integrity. I know there was a lot of comments about Mr. Stirling, but I took the decision after reading some of that.
How did you secure access to David Stirling in the first place?
A simple invitation, Stephen, to come and speak. Everybody in society has the same opportunity to engage with civil servants that I do.
But that's the point, isn't it? I guess the point here is that some people might feel there's no way they could get access to the head of the civil service. You know, most of the people listening to this programme today, there's no way they could get a meeting with David Stirling.
Well, I can't speak to that, Stephen. That is up to people to, I suppose, initially make the effort and then to follow it up. And then after that, it's purely a matter for the civil service.
What was to be discussed at this, Terry? What have these businesses lost out hearing?
Well, I think it's already very clear in Sam McBride's article that this was an education event. This was an information event. This was an opportunity to better understand what the civil service do. It was an opportunity as well for the civil service to be informed about the pressures and the needs of some organisations in society.
And how many businesses were due to go?
I think we had about six businesses, seven charities, and a few which don't really fall into either of those brackets.
Does that not sound rather exclusive to you?
No, not at all.
Just six businesses? Were they hand-picked?
No, absolutely not. As you know, and as Sam McBride put on his article, this was an event organised through Eventbrite. There was absolutely nothing hidden. Everything was very open. And that's all I've got to say, Stephen. I think that's enough for this morning. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to have a brief conversation with you. We're a bit disappointed, but that's where we are this morning.
Terry, thanks for coming on. Listening to that, Sam McBride from the newsletter who wrote the article. I know you only heard the end of that interview, Sam. Essentially, Terry McAleen is saying, look, there was nothing to see here, and he's disappointed, but he felt he had to do it because Twitter and Facebook was going ballistic.
Well, I think the first thing which I should say about Terry McAleen is that I spoke to him on Friday about this. He was very upfront about it. He phoned me back. He didn't try to hide behind a statement. He answered all of my questions about this. And he really fundamentally could see why people were asking questions about this. And I think this really points to a much wider issue that at the current point, we have civil servants who are operating almost as politicians. They are not used to that role. It's not a role which they're comfortable with. And these sorts of situations are going to come up where they're handling a massive budget situation, about £10 billion at the moment is being discussed. And you've got people who seem to be getting preferential access to them based on their ability to pay, essentially.
Well, the first thing that this programme's going to do, by the way, this morning, is we're going to get in touch with Mr Stirling's representatives and say, look, if he was prepared to do this event, would he be prepared to do a sit-down interview with the Nolan Show? If he's trying to push the message out there, let's see how receptive he is to sit-down interview, Sam.
Well, that's a very obvious question, and I think you'll not be the only person queuing up to ask those sorts of questions of him this morning. I think one of the issues here, which we should be very explicit about, there's absolutely no suggestion that David Stirling was in any way going to benefit from this in a cash sense or anything of that nature. That would be totally improper if that was the case, and there's not even a hint of that. So I think some people might be putting two and two together here and getting six. That is not what the question is here. The question here is whether somebody who's able to pay to go to an event like this gets preferential access to somebody who is basically running Northern Ireland at this point without any democratic oversight, and whether, as you say, that means other people who can't afford to pay, who don't want to pay, can't get that sort of access. And I know that last night, for instance, some of the people who are RHI boiler claimants who have been very unhappy at aspects of how the government has been treating them over the last year were saying they couldn't get a meeting with some of these senior civil servants, and yet they see that presumably if they had paid to go to this, they could have. So I think it does raise very significant issues and questions of public interest, but it also speaks to the very unusual nature of where we are. But I think even in a situation where the civil service was not in really absolute control, I think there'd be questions about this. But in the current situation, I think this looks very, very awkward for them.
Well, flip that, Sam. So here's David. If a number of businesses and charities asked for a meeting with David Stirling and he blanked them or didn't get back to them or didn't make himself available, some people would say, well, why aren't you prepared to meet them? So all he was doing was making himself available. There was no money in it for him. So why aren't we applauding him for wanting to do it?
Well, I think from his perspective, given that he really gains nothing in any sort of personal sense out of this, I think that is a very understandable way to approach it. I think the issue for the civil service is that they, I suppose, can't just look at these things in terms of how they impact on them. They have to look at the wider picture. And in some senses, that is what a politician would do here. So if you were a politician, you would know that you get your mandate from the people. You would know that it matters to you what people think about these things, how it looks. I think there's a sense here that perhaps the civil service doesn't have that sort of nose for how people look at things, how things smell to people. Whether there's anything right or wrong about them is almost a secondary issue. Sometimes it's about whether this looks like there might be something that's not quite right and that somebody somewhere is losing out because they're not paying money. But I think you can entirely understand how a senior civil servant who's trying to speak to as many people as possible is going to something like this. I think the thing which might slightly undermine that is if it does turn out that there have been other occasions where David Stirling has said, I won't meet you or I can't meet you or I'll send a much more junior official. And in this case, he is going to this. So there is an element of priority in terms of what all of us do. And if he is managing to go to this event, but there are other events which he's not going to, I think that would then raise questions. But that's something which isn't quite clear at this point.
You talk about ministers. Were there not many times when we didn't know who ministers were meeting? And what about? At least this was public.
That's right, and I think that is one of the issues, which, as I started, is to the credit of Terry McAuley, who's been organising this. There's been no sense that this has been done in secret. It was public. It was drawn to my attention, but it was in public. It was just that I suppose most people wouldn't have spotted this. And he and David Stirling have been upfront in terms of answering questions about this. But I think that certainly in the past, I know that trying to get access to the ministerial diary of some of the Stormont ministers under the Freedom of Information Act, there has been a great reluctance to give that out. And actually, in particular, when those people are meeting businesses, quite often what they try to do is hide behind commercial confidentiality clauses within the Freedom of Information Act to try to say that's something which is so sensitive we couldn't give to you. I think that does raise questions there. But to a certain extent, in a functioning Stormont system, those ministers ought to be held to account by coming before the Assembly, by coming before scrutiny committees, and there are certain mechanisms there which ought to be at least able to try to prise that information out of them. I suppose the concern at the moment is that you've really got this body of people who are running Northern Ireland through no fault of their own. They've been left in this situation through the failure of politics, but they're running Northern Ireland without that sort of oversight. And in that situation, I suppose, there's greater concern about the potential for anything that might go awry.
Final question. How much power and ability to actually make decisions does David Stirling have?
I think that is one of the questions which none of us can really answer, and I'm not really sure if he can even answer that at this point. Certainly in terms of how the civil service have responded to the question of how far their powers extend, suggests that they are not quite clear about them. And I know from talking to some of the senior civil servants, talking to some of the people who have worked in the Stormont system, there are a range of views as to what they can and cannot do. And ultimately, I think that is what potentially makes the current situation so dangerous, because you have a situation where a civil servant could construct a public interest argument to make almost any decision, I think, and yet he could equally construct a public interest argument that really not in the public interest to take that decision, and that gives them extraordinary freedom as to how far they really extend in terms of making decisions. But in the current context, they are putting together what is a draft budget of about £10 billion, more than £10 billion. That will go to Parliament ultimately, so they will not finally be the people who decide on that. But it's very unlikely that Westminster, with 650 MPs, who in many cases have very little knowledge of what's going on here, will fundamentally alter that in any significant way. So in a de facto sense, they have very significant power here.
And budgets would have been discussed at this meeting.
Well, it certainly seemed like the budgetary situation was one of the purposes behind this meeting. The material which was advertising this was on several occasions highlighting the financial aspect of what was currently going on. And I think, quite understandably, from the point of view of people who have contracts with the public sector, who are charities or whatever, they are trying to get some sort of answer as to when they will have a budget, when they will know that they're able to either employ people or whether they will have to lay people off, and all of those sorts of questions. So that is, I suppose, the major attraction of this to those people, that they could come hear from the man who is running Northern Ireland, and I suppose at the very least get some clarity from him as to when they're likely to know that and who's able to take those decisions.
Okay. Sam McBride, thank you very much indeed. Thank you.